Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Prof G Pod's Office Hours. This is the part of the show where we answer questions about business, big tech, entrepreneurship, and whatever else is on your mind. If you'd like to submit a question, please visit officehours.profgmedia.com. Again, that's officehours.profgmedia.com. First question.
Hey, Prof G. My name is Alejandro Rivera, and I'm calling in from Los Angeles, California. I wanted to get your opinion on what you think Apple should focus on with their new EV in order to compete with Rivian and Tesla. Do you think their main focus should be on taking advantage of Tesla's poor customer support? Should it be to manufacture more vehicles than both? Or should it be some other option? Also, what do you think about Apple including their EV into their Apple One program or a variation of it? They could follow the Porsche model where all memberships include insurance, roadside assistance, vehicle maintenance, and even the ability to switch between car models. Would love to hear your opinions on this, and thanks for all the work you do.
That's a great question, Alejandro, and I wish I had had more time to think about this because I'm not sure I have a great answer. So I love the idea of Apple folding it into a rundle, and that is Apple One, which now includes Apple Arcade and Apple Music and some other services for, I don't know what they charge per month, but 20% of the revenue comes from subscription services, including Apple Music. I love the idea of one big bundle that's you get the latest and greatest Apple products, including access to their car, or maybe you get their car, or maybe you get access to unlimited free rides in their autonomous Uber-like system. I don't know, but it seems to me that Apple is circling around one giant rundle, if you will. The Apple car, I think it's going to be an EV car that's going to be beautiful. I think they should price it towards the high end. I think Apple is a luxury item and is a way of signaling that you're part of the elite. You're part of the billion wealthiest consumers in the world, iOS users. It's a great signaling device. It says, I'm a great storyteller. I'm an artisan. I think different. I think like Jackie Robinson and Gandhi and Jim Henson have sex with me. I think Apple is the most kind of subtle way to say, I can protect your children better than the guy who has an Android phone because I'm clearly a baller and smarter and more elegant and all the cool things that we look for in mates. Bit of a digression, but I sort of think everything comes down to basic instincts. Anyways, they'll probably try and integrate better media, I would guess. The operating system will be iOS. I don't know what other kind of cool stuff they could do with it. They're talking about the windows could be sort of screens or themselves displaying data. The one piece of information I feel fairly confident in saying is that I think Tim Cook is about to become, you know, the cat burglar of the decade. And that is when he pulls that silk cloth off of an Apple car and opens it for deposits, I think you're going to see more deposits within 24 hours on the Apple car than you've seen on the rest of these things combined. And I think you're going to see a giant reallocation of capital out of Tesla into Apple. And also, I think Apple's going to start taking capital from Facebook and other companies that have seen or there's some expectation they'll play a role in the metaverse. I think Apple kind of already has a metaverse called the App Store. A lot of people on Twitter have said, I don't understand the future or the power of the metaverse. But anyways, I'm learning. Keep in mind, I'm 85. That's not easy to understand this shit when you're towards your ninth decade Apple, back to the Apple car. I don't know entirely what to expect. And also, I think Apple's Titan project has been a bit of a shit show and all over the map, and was initially a vanity project from John Ive. And then all of a sudden, the global or the EV market went from being worth nothing to $1.5 trillion. And Apple's like, well, I think we'll take some of that. So it's going to be fascinating. Hope it's part of a bundle. I'm skeptical on the role autonomous plays. What I do know is that Apple is going to be over, or what I believe is be over $200 a share on the notion or the promise of, well, actually, we're going to have the best EV vehicle and we are the metaverse. Thanks for the question, Alejandro. Question number two.
Hi, Professor G. I'm Mia, a third-year student at NYU concentrating in fintech and entrepreneurship at the Gallatin School of Individualized Study. I wanted to ask and hear your thoughts about the news surrounding the new University of Austin. According to reports, this is supposedly a startup university known to be in the fearless pursuit of truth, and it's supposed to add some novelty into higher ed. Do you believe what U of Austin pledges is necessary and offers a new take in this dated industry of institutionalized education to maybe help students branch out of their specific majors as well and be willing to explore outside of it, maybe adopting the Thiel Fellowship kind of learning experience? Or would it be most logical to just strengthen current university systems and have them reinvent themselves based on the way of U of Austin proposes? Thank you.
Mia from NYU, it's so reaffirming to hear from people as thoughtful and articulate as yourself that you decide or continue to decide to come to NYU. We have two things going for us. One, our brand, and two, that really talented young people decide to come spend 4 years with us. Anyways, University of Austin, I know some people involved in the founding of this, and I think it's a really good idea. Yeah, I think that anything that expands the number of freshman seats, anything that it can attract capital. If you look at higher ed, the enforcer of the cartel is these accreditation institutions that are staffed by, you guessed it, the incumbents, and they've grown universities at 0.5% per year, because why create more competition? So let's keep other universities from starting up. And the result is artificial constraints on supply, which results in this incredible price increases that have really been incredibly damaging to middle-class America. But anyways, back to the University of Austin. It's planning a soft start next summer with Forbidden Courses, which will offer a spirited discussion about the most provocative questions that often lead to censorship or self-censorship in many universities. The university then plans to expand to master's programs and in several years to undergraduate courses. Its founding trustees and advisors include historian Neil Ferguson, who I know and I'm a big fan of, former Harvard president Larry Summers, psychologist Steven Pinker, Palantir Technologies co-founder Joe Lonsdale, and journalist Barry Weiss and Andrew Sullivan. So I think anything that expands the number of seats is a good idea. I also do believe there's a problem with a university that's decided to more from our traditional role of being a place for provocative thought, where we would push back on each other and really stress the muscle in between our ears, our brain, and come back stronger and be open to other people's ideas. The whole idea of a campus was that it was placed outside the city so we could say provocative, even offensive things like the world isn't flat, and not have to be worried about being burnt to the stake. And the progressive / woke culture or intolerance, especially among students towards each other, where if you don't sign up for a certain narrative and a certain orthodoxy, you're somewhat shunned, I think has been really damaging. At the same time, and this is where, quite frankly, the University of Austin fucked up, and that is around the messaging initially, because whether they intended to or not, what they didn't acknowledge is that orthodoxy or preconceived orthodoxy that suppresses the free exploration or discussion of different varying viewpoints, which is central to the notion of academia and universities, it happens on the right too. Liberty University, Bob Jones University, BYU, I think you can still get kicked out of if you're found having sex. I mean, they have an orthodoxy that's conservative and aren't as open as they should be to free thought and debate and evidence and argument. But when they try and start a university on the premise that we should be open to discourse and not a predetermined orthodoxy, that makes sense. But they gave the impression that all they were doing was substituting a left-wing orthodoxy for a right-wing orthodoxy. I think they screwed up, as they should have had They should have messaged better. And I also think that a couple progressives on the founding team would have served them well. Instead, they just came out with, you know, same dog, different fleas. And I don't think that's their intent. I think the University of Austin and any other startup universities are a good thing. We need to break the cartel of higher ed. I'm a supporter of the University of Austin. I just think they fucked up and shot themselves in the foot. And it's a really interesting case study in poor messaging and not recognizing that you're not going to convince people that there's a problem and a need to have a university that doesn't have preconceived notions of what's right and wrong other than science when you start from a position where you're perceived as having your own orthodoxy that you're trying to foist upon young people, whether they intended to or not. That's what ultimately I think they got kind of pigeonholed as. So this is a terrible launch for them. These are really talented, impressive people. My understanding is they've raised a shit ton of capital. We'll see what happens. I think it survives, but it's an interesting case study on how not to message around a launch. Thank you for the question, Mia. We have one quick break before our final question. Stay with us. Support for Prop G comes from Mint Mobile. If you're tired of your pricey phone bill, you could make room for it by cutting out frivolous expenses, your lattes, your gym membership, your favorite streaming service. But that sounds terrible. Another probably better option is switching to a more affordable provider, like Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That includes high-speed 5G data plus unlimited talk and text. And Mint Mobile has great rates whether you're buying for one or for a family. And their family plan starts at just 2 lines. You also don't need to get a new device. When you buy a new Mint Mobile plan, you can use your own phone and keep your phone number and contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/propg. That's mintmobile.com/propg. Cut your wireless bill up to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/propg. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Support for Prop G comes from NerdWallet. You don't have to be a genius to start making better financial decisions today. It's not that sexy, but piling up lots of little monetary victories today can yield some pretty significant rewards down the line. The tricky part is knowing where to start. NerdWallet can help. Their financial experts have helped countless people find ways to maximize every dollar they earn. Now, the team is helping folks get more from every dollar they spend. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering up to 10 times the points on every dollar you charge. Their expert team of nerds do the work reviewing top credit cards so you can trust you have the smartest one for future you. If I had better rewards right now, I'd probably upgrade my hotel at South by Southwest so I could have a big fat party and everyone would be impressed and love me. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Welcome back. Question number 3.
Hey, Scott. I'm really interested in hearing how much time, or in your opinion, how much time I should be spending managing my investment portfolio. I sort of go between spending a lot of time on it during the day, night, to not spending any time on it at all. And I'm struggling to find that balance. Really interested to hear your thoughts. Just generally, really appreciate all the work you do and love listening to the podcast. Thanks so much.
This is an interesting question, Adrian, from San Francisco. I would say that the algebra of wealth goes something like this. Focus. Find your talent. Be really good at something such that you can find something people will pay you a lot of money for. Diversification. At the end of the day, the Kevlar that saves you from any one bad decision, I made a lot of them, but those mistakes were never fatal, is to be diversified. And then 3, let time take over. And that is, I bought Apple in 2008 at $12 a share. It's 160. But it never had one huge year. It just kept creeping up. And I kind of wake up 13 years later and it's up, you know, 14X, which is very rewarding. the danger to what you're talking about, spend a lot of time trying to get better at what you do. Spend a lot of time thinking and planning around how you save money and what your investment strategy is. But once your investment strategy is in place, unless you really enjoy it or you're learning from it, I would say spend less time. Now, what do I mean by that? Day traders, 80 to 95% of day traders lose money. And a lot of people think that they're doing something worthwhile by trading stocks. They're not. They're looking for a dopa hit. It's similar to gambling, and that's fine, but recognize it's gambling. Whereas if you picked any five stocks from the S&P 500 and you didn't touch them for 10 years, nobody has ever lost money. So unless this is your profession, unless you get huge enjoyment out of it yourself, what I would say is spend a lot of time thinking about a financial plan. And that is put in place a realistic plan that looks at your income, your lifestyle, and says, all right, I need to bust a move to having at least $1 million, pick a number, by the time I'm 40 or 50, which means saving this much, assuming these types of returns, and then put in place that plan. And what people don't want to acknowledge is your wealth is more a function of how much money you save as opposed to how much money you earn or how well your investments do. I have probably 80% of my net worth comes from returns on investments, but I wouldn't have that 80% unless the initial 20% of capital came from focusing on something I was good at and selling a company or getting paid well, and also living below my means such that I could save money to have a base to invest. But just thinking you're trading and investing and looking at your portfolio every day, I don't know. I think that's a recipe for losing money and distracting from your ability to have money, and that is focus on what you're good at. So for the most part, unless this is your business, if you will, be focused on how to save money, be focused on how to make more, and then either do an ETF, a robo-advisor, diversification, and low fees are really the key. Invest in good companies, invest in good ETFs, and then leave it alone and ignore it because it's a very difficult time in the markets. I know how to get you rich. That's the good news. The bad news, Adrian, is the answer is slowly. That's all for this episode. Again, if you'd like to submit a question, please visit officehours.propgmedia.com. Our producers are Caroline Chagrin and Drew Burrows. Claire Miller is our assistant producer. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you on Thursday.
This podcast was supported by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why we do the things we do. Listen to Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.